Welcome to Well Grounded. This is Randy Conan from the Red River Farm Network.
And this is Jason Menke from Acres and Shares.
This podcast brings together experts from the world of agriculture and real estate. We'll talk about farmland values, industry trends, and the economy.
In this edition of Well Grounded, our guest is Brian Parman. He is an agricultural finance specialist at North Dakota State University Extension. Parman has been with NDSU since May 2018. Before that, he worked at Mississippi State University in a similar role and is originally from southwest Nebraska.
In his current role, Brian identifies financial issues faced with North Dakota farmers and livestock producers and develops extension programs to help keep North Dakota agriculture financially healthy. Today, we'll talk to Brian about the 2022 North Dakota Department of Trust Land Survey released this spring and his role with the survey. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to start out, normally I start out asking a question of the guest, but I'm going to start asking Randy a question here. Really? So I'm pretty sure, you know, we had Brian on a year ago, and I didn't go back and listen to that recording, Randy, but, you know, I kind of recall that he might have told us that we would have double-digit increases in land values by next year. Do you remember that?
I do.
Brian, do you remember that?
No, actually, if I said that, that's great, but I do not remember saying that. I last year the things have changed so much in the last 18 months, and there's been so much going on both politically around the world with the pandemic, and making predictions is pretty risky. This day and age, given how much things can change in just 6 weeks, let alone a year. So I think we saw an increase probably coming in it, but it came with the caveat. As an economist, we always hedge our answers, right? And it came with the caveat that, you know, should commodity prices stay high, should production costs not increase dramatically, we could see an increase in what we had 2021. Really strong commodity prices. Production costs, well, at least compared to now, were pretty low. They were about right on par with the five-year average. So we just finished the analysis and closed out 2021's net farm incomes for North Dakota. And it's one of the best years on record, if not the best year on record. So, and I'm sure that's probably true around much of the country. And so it's not surprising that we saw a sizable increase in farmland values.
Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I just kind of had to make light of a year ago, because obviously nobody would have predicted where we're at. And then we of course saw a drought last summer. It's been just a crazy year since we last visited. Do you want to just start by giving us a background of the Trust Land Survey in North Dakota?
Sure. So the survey is done, again, like you said, by the North Dakota Department of Trust Lands. And what they do, they're going around surveying at the county level, land rents and land prices for cropland and pasture land. And I'll get the pasture land report out here in the next week or two, I hope. But that they get it at the county level. And then what we do at North Dakota State is we take that county level data and we combine it into North Dakota State's extension regions, which, if anyone's familiar with our budgets, it's the same regions as the crop budgets we put out. And we also weight it by the number of acres in the county. That way, a much larger county in terms of number of acres has a larger impact in that region's impact on that region's rental or cropland sales price than a smaller county with fewer acres. So that it tries to account for the number of acres in each county's contribution to that region.
Any surprises in the survey?
Well, I mean, the overall increase, I suppose, is not terribly surprising. When I put this together, you'll see some regions with much larger increases than others. I suppose one of the big surprises was there were no regions that showed any kind of a decrease at all. A lot of times we'll make the report that maybe land prices increased 2 or 3%. You had some that actually, according to the survey, declined some increased a lot, but on average it was positive. All the regions in terms of land values increased. And the other thing that was not surprising to me anyway, and this is kind of one of the things I was talking about headed into the spring, I thought that while there would be an increase in land prices, double digits, coming into October, November, I was also saying that I didn't think rental rates would be nearly as high as land price increases due to production costs and fears over that. And that turned out to be the case with a more modest 3% in cash rents.
So tell us a little bit overall about the study for the state and just some other general comments that you would take out of the study.
Well, one thing I found interesting, and this is not just related to this particular study, but going back many, many years, is how the land prices, relative land prices across North Dakota have changed. Used to be, the South Red River Valley region and the North Red River Valley region were by far and away, especially the South being the most expensive farmland in the state. And then the North Red River Valley was second. And then the further north and west you went, in Southwest too, the lower the values were. Well, what's happened over the last 20 years or so is places like the Southeast region and the East Central region have actually just about, the Southeast has caught the North Red River Valley in terms of price, and the East Central is not terribly far behind it. And then those regions have far outpaced in terms of value growth areas like the Northwest and the North Central, which they used to be on par with. And a lot of that's had to do with the technological improvements in corn and soybeans for this region. And those two regions were, the state, I should say, and those two regions were better equipped climate-wise and soil-wise to take advantage of those technological improvements, and therefore their land prices have gone up faster than pretty much any other region in the state.
When we look at the East Central, we're talking Wells, Eddy, Foster, Stutzman. We look at the Southeast, we're looking at Steele, Barnes, Lemoore, Dickey, Ransom, and Sargent. And, the time frame that you outlined, this is my 22nd year of selling land. And, within that time frame, just what corn and beans have done to those regions has just been, incredible for farmers and profitability.
That's absolutely right. And as you would imagine, land prices have increased with it because those regions were able to take advantage of it. When you look at more like the North Central, Rolette, Botno, McHenry, Benson, not climate-wise, as the growing season's a bit shorter, a little bit less, a bit less precipitation, different soil profiles, not as well equipped to take advantage of this corn and soybean boom that happened, post 2000 and onward, and whereas the East Central and Southeast was. And so profitability in those East Central and Southeast was much better. They were able to take advantage of those major crops more so than other areas, and their land price adjusted accordingly.
It's also the same areas too. It seems like there's a little more cattle too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Obviously in North Dakota, you see more cattle in the West than you do the East. Part of that being that the farmland in, like, for instance, take the extreme example, the South Red River Valley is just too valuable as farmland to go out and graze cattle on. Historically, and as I'm from Southwest Nebraska, a lot of the places you graze cattle is not so productive land. Not that it couldn't be farmed, but it's probably better off as grass, and you're going to get more out of it putting weight on cattle than you are trying to raise a crop on it, for whatever the reason may be. And that tends to be the case the farther west in North Dakota you move.
Irrigation and or tile make a difference too or not?
Sure. Tiling, especially in the eastern part of the state and the valley, tiling can have a major impact. Let's look at this year, for example, and how wet it is right now. It's been cool. It's been wet. You get it tiled, you're able to get into the field sooner, get planted on time or sooner than your neighbors, for instance, and where you otherwise might not have, and you're able to take advantage of, our growing season isn't that long, and we don't have a ton of time to get into the field and wait for things to dry out. So if we can get in there on time, maximize our yield potential based on the growing degree days that we have, that's obviously going to add some value. It's not true every single year, but in a year like right now, at least in the East, when it's pretty wet, It can be a huge benefit. And I actually saw the same things happen down in Mississippi, where they were tiling everything that they can because of how wet it is in spring and the ability to get into the field on time.
Brian, what did we see across the board for the state as far as a percent increase from 2021? And then in the southeast and east central that you mentioned, what did we see for increases there?
Well, like I said, we were almost at 11% just as a state average, 10.9 to be exact, on the land price increase from 21 to 22. But the big increase, the largest as a region, southeast was up 22.25%. With these surveys, I do like to tell folks to exercise a little bit of caution. You know, don't hang your hat on the exact percentage, because depending on what was surveyed, what was sold, what people saw, that might be a little bit inflated. It might, the true number, in other words, might be closer to 18-19%, for instance, or it could be 25, or the other, with the other regions, because you can have some issues with the data. But when you have across the board increases like this, you start to believe it. And so that was the largest, was the southeast at 22.25%. The smallest increase was in the south central at 4.9%. But again, it might, the true number might be slight a bit higher than that. But by and large, you know, 10.9, 11% increase is actually the biggest that we've seen in almost a decade as far as our land price increases. And in fact, I would argue that when you adjust for inflation and you go back and look at the years, the reports that we put out prior, small little 2% increases and 1% decreases, essentially I'd call that flat. Land prices were kind of, in real dollar terms, decreasing when you account for inflationary factors.
I'm glad that you mentioned earlier that to take the information and use it carefully. As we talked about a year ago, it's good baseline information. I mean, just a good example is like the Northern River Valley as an example. You know, you're taking into account all of Walsh County, all of Grand Forks County, and you get into the, you know, western part of those counties outside of the valley, and it's a little bit different game. What I've seen this winter for kind of a high water mark in Walsh County, there was a sale up by Vesleyville back in March that was at $12,700 per tillable acre. There was a sale within the last month or so near Hoople in Pemina County at $12,500. You know, so there's been some pretty aggressive sales. And you know, I think when you look at the state as a whole, those numbers are pretty close, but there's been a lot of, you know, sales probably of the really good farmland that are more in tune to those southeast numbers, where we're talking, you know, 15 to 20% or even in some cases 25 to 30% above expectations.
Yeah, and you see that. Those tend to make the headlines a lot of times for obvious reasons. You know, you see $12,000 an acre in North Dakota, and you think, whoa, that's a lot of money, and it is. Some of the other sales that you might see, the $6,000 or $5,000, there's probably more of them, and they don't tend to make too many waves because nobody really raises an eyebrow at those specific sales, or they're not that memorable. So maybe some of those go unnoticed, and it brings the number down lower than some folks might have thought it was or would have been.
Absolutely. I think a friend of mine in the industry, he summed it up quite well. When he gets asked about, you know, what land's worth in a specific area, he said it all depends on the neighborhood. Right now, we're dealing with motivations that are hard to predict and to quantify. And I think that hits it on the head, because, you know, just because we're seeing, you know, double-digit increases or, you know, 20 to 30% increases in areas doesn't mean that that's across the board.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you even see that kind of thing in like residential real estate property in an area like Fargo. The area I happen to live in, Southwest, West Fargo, you know, in the Horace area, it's exploding. Houses are getting built. Prices are high. And then you have other areas of the city where it's pretty, you know, flat. Things aren't moving very much, just depending on what's going on and the way direction folks are moving. Farmland has kind of some of the same characteristics. And I know it's not so much in this state, but you take like a state like Iowa, you'll see farmland sell for extremely high amounts if it's next to a hog operation or a dairy or something. And they're bidding up the price because they need a place to offload the manure and don't really care as much per acre what they're paying. They still need a place to dump it. So you take that and look at it and say, whoa, farmland prices are sky high or increasing dramatically. Well, that was a little bit of a special case, if you know what I mean.
Brian, when we were, I was joking as we started the podcast about, you know, predictions, and none of us wanted to get into predictions. It's fun to make light of it, but as you identify financial issues faced by producers in the region, and you're running crop budgets for 2022, I mean, I look at the land market and, you know, look at it continuing to be strong for the foreseeable future, you know, into fall. Just because there's a lot of cash out there. But what do you see as you run the numbers and budgets for 2022?
Well, when we put our budgets together, it was several months ago, and Ron Haugen is the lead man on putting the budgets together. But, you know, even with the higher production costs, we're still looking at projecting a strong year for 2022, just because commodity prices have been so strong that even with expensive fertilizer and expensive herbicides and pesticides and the equipment market being up and the land market for that matter, we're still looking at a strong year. Probably my guess would be not as strong as 21 in terms of net farm incomes, because not because of the commodity price side, but the production cost side is a lot higher than it was last year. But at the same time, I'm as long as farmers were able to and are able to take advantage of spring wheat prices and soybean prices and corn prices where they are and all the other crops, we're probably looking at a solid year in 2022, which is going to do nothing to soften the land market, I should say. I'd hate to project another a big double digit pop, but at the same time, I don't think there's going to be any depression anytime soon as far as land prices go.
Any kind of a bubble that we need to worry about then?
I don't know that it's a bubble, you see, because the last 7-8 years prior, there wasn't really much movement at all. I think that there was some folks who would like to sell and some folks who wanted to purchase, given the situation we found ourselves in with the prices from 2014 on all the way through 2019 and then even into 2020. And then we had finally we have this big infusion of cash in 2020 to a degree from CFAP, and then 2021 just from strong commodity prices and reasonable production costs. So I don't know that there's going to be a big reversion downwards in land prices. There may be something to mute the upward movement. There may be some factors that stop the upward march to a degree, kind of like what happened in 2014 and 15. But I'm not sure that we're going to see a decline after if things settle down and commodity prices come down.
Brian, any other comments from the study or just the land market in general that you'd like to share with podcast listeners?
Well, the one comment I wanted to make was on the rental side of things. You know, I guess I can talk about my maybe one correct prediction that I've ever had in the last 6 months. And that was that rents would be a lot slower to increase relative to prices. And that turned out to be the case at just, you know, around 3%. And I think folks were looking at those production costs and saying to them, you know, landlords and tenants alike, saying, you know, look, yes, we know commodity prices are high, but production costs have increased and are continuing to increase, in some cases 200% increases over the year before, and reluctant to pay, you know, 10, 11, 12% more in cash rents relative to last year. The other thing, we've done some research on this, or some talks on this, and I'm sure you're familiar in the land market talking about cap rates, right? Where you take the cash rental rate and divide it by the land price and you get this cap rate. We call it a cap rate, right? Well, the cap rate has historically been about 1% below the prevailing interest rate. And that's going all the way back to 1990. So in 1990, interest rates were about 10%. The cap rate, the cash rental rate divided by the land price was about 9%. And as interest rates have trekked downward, pretty much marched downward steadily since that period of time, the cap rates in North Dakota, at least the last few years, have been around that 2.5-3% mark. Well, now as interest rates are going up and are going to continue to go up for the foreseeable future, to maintain that relationship, one of two things is going to have to happen. Either cash rents are going to have to go up pretty quickly, or land prices are going to have to come down to maintain that relationship. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually turns out to happen, if that relationship is strong enough to pull rental rates high enough to maintain the cap rate, maybe just a point below the interest rate.
Brian, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think some of these strong sales that we've seen this winter, I would totally agree with your range of 2.5-3%. And I think in a lot of cases, it was tough to find 3%. But some of these sales this winter pushed it down to 2-2.5%, which, you know, you kind of scratch your head a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And so in that relationship, of course, we're talking about a long time horizon. I'm talking about 30 plus years now. So there may be years, maybe two or three, where that relationship's a little bit out of whack, where that 1% below the prevailing prime rate is doesn't hold. But on average, it tends to hold over that time horizon that I'm talking about. And so I'm wondering, my guess would be in the short run that rents are going to have to adjust in order to, that are going to be the first thing to adjust. And by adjust, I mean move upwards to get that relationship back closer to where it has been. The other thing that would have to happen over a long enough time horizon, if this land price situation we have kind of stays constant, land prices will stay the same, just kind of hold, and rents will creep up year over year to maintain that relationship.
Anything else? If not, I think we've kind of covered it. Thanks to Brian Parman for being part of this conversation. The Well-Grounded Podcast is a presentation of Acres and Shares and the Red River Farm Network.
You can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. It's also available at rrfn.com and acresandshares.com. Until next time, I'm Randy Conan.
And I'm Jason Menke.